Welcome to the Placebo Magic Podcast, the podcast about imaginative self-care for skeptics. I'm your host, Durmok, the wizard and peasant lord of the vast 10-acre realm of Hobdur, also known as Garrison Benson. Greetings, placebo mages. Today, exploring the relationship between the contents of our homes and the contents of our consciousness. But first, thank you to our newest Patreon backer, Alex. And thank you to our backers at the producer level or above, Alconet, Emily, A Sociology of Tarot, Agnominimus, Annie, Brianne, Carrie, Dev, Fen, Gune, John, Tony, and Valerie. All right, so today I want to talk about stuff and sort of the power that stuff has over us and the power that we can kind of tap into by being more intentional about how we deal with stuff in our life. And when I talk about stuff, I'm particularly referring to like our possessions. I've been doing some very intensive spring cleaning lately, and this is kind of the result of I've been redoing my tiny house to some extent and remodeling. In the process, I kind of took out a lot of my built-in storage capacity. Like I tore out my pantry, I tore out my built-in couch that had storage underneath, and took down some shelving. And so in the meantime, until I get around to building back new storage capacity, I've been taking some stuff to my barn. And it's kind of having that effect on me, like when I've moved from place to place in the past, where I that's an occasion that makes it easier to get rid of stuff, because it's like, if you're going to be boxing it up anyway, why not take some of those boxes to the thrift store, right? I also, by recommendation from someone on the Discord, I read Marie Kondo's book, Karashi at Home, which is kind of a follow-up to some extent to her more famous The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And I've also read that book in the past, and I've actually, Patreon backers know, I've discussed that on the Patreon bonus show before. But this is, I think, the first time I've come close to doing what she recommends in that book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, which is this going through all of your stuff in the span of, 6 months. I've not done that entirely, but I've come pretty close. So I've had that book and her ideas in my head as I go through this stuff, and particularly kind of trying to observe what each object makes me feel. And, for myself, I think a lot of that is, she has this idea of, you pick up an object and ask yourself if it sparks joy. And that kind of a lot of times gets boiled down to like a meme or I think I've Marie Kondo kind of alongside like Bob Ross, in that they both have this in popular culture kind of get memeified and turned into this kind of joke and punchline. But as funny as that can be, it kind of misses the point, and kind of, I think Marie Kondo, there's a lot of subtlety into what she's talking about. And I think what she's talking about in terms of doing this tidying festival, she talks a lot in her books about how that can change your life, and talks about these different clients that she had and how it changed their life. And sometimes the causality is a little nebulous. It's like, oh, this client did this tidying festival, and then the next year they decided to, start a new business that made them more happy than their job or whatever. And I think that it's not that getting rid of stuff just magically makes you happy or magically makes good things happen in your life. The getting rid of things is really secondary, I think, to the process. I think the process is kind of transformative in its own right, in that you are picking up objects, watching how they make you feel, which is really a mindfulness exercise. It's very similar to how in mindfulness, if a thought or emotion pops up, you kind of just observe it non-judgmentally and let it go. A lot of times, we're surrounded by objects that are making us feel things, and we don't really stop to actually observe what those feelings are. And sometimes it's not just feelings. Sometimes it's like impulses and cravings and behaviors that they're triggering, and we don't really stop to consider that. And I think, Marie Kondo's Tidying Festival, it's like she's recommending that in the span of about 6 months, you go through all of your belongings one by one. That's thousands of reps in terms of this mindfulness experience of asking yourself, how does this make me feel? And so I think that these kind of, seemingly miraculous results that she talks about with these life changes that happen to people after they do her Tidying Festival, I think that a lot of those boil down to people honing their instinct toward observing how things make them feel and then being able to turn that toward other questions than just their stuff, being able to turn it toward, like, how does this romantic relationship make me feel? Or how does this job make me feel? How does living in this city make me feel? For me, as I've been going through a lot of my stuff, this is the most cleaning I've done since I moved up north to Hobdur. So a lot of the objects that I've been encountering as I go through some of my storage in my barn and whatnot is things that are associated with this time period of the first year or two when I lived here. And I had this very optimistic timetable for how I was going to get all these projects done, and the delusional optimism kind of, not only did it was it about like the timetable, but I wanted to do all these really weird, interesting projects that now I don't think are worth the time because I have a more realistic sense of how long they would actually take, and I just think they're not worth it. And so going through these old objects, it kind of makes me ask myself, is this something I actually still care about? If it's like a material for a project, or a tool for a project, or a piece of paper that shows my plans for a project, I have to ask myself, is this something that I actually still want to do someday? And a lot of these are things I haven't even thought about in over a year. I just completely forgot about them, but I still have this sense of release and kind of liberation when I get rid of that object and realize or kind of declare to myself, no, I don't care about this anymore. You know, it's like I had these expectations that I never quite let go of and never quite release myself from. And then when I go through the objects, it triggers this thing. It takes me into this dusty corner of my mind where there was some baggage there that was weighing me down in a sense. And I would never have even known it was there if I didn't do this process of kind of going through these objects and asking myself if I want to keep them. And so whether or not I choose to keep them, the end result is kind of like having this clearer sense of like, where do I have this like stale guilt or stale expectations, expired expectations that are no longer serving me? And I can dispense with those, whether or not I keep the actual items involved. A lot of cases I keep the objects because it's just like a piece of scrap wood that I can use for anything. But when I process it in this kind of spring cleaning, Marie Kondo Tidying Festival sense, picking up that object and thinking like, yeah, do I want to keep this? It forces me to acknowledge this baggage that's attached to it and at least liberate the baggage even if I keep the object. The thing about our minds is that we can't just like access whatever part of them we want to whenever we want to. So like there can be things just kind of hiding out in our brains for years that we don't even really know are there. I mean, I think of this thing where, you know, you listen to a song that you haven't listened to for a long time and that is very strongly associated with a particular time in your life. And it can take you back not only to just memories, but emotions that pop up that you thought were gone. You know, if you have a song that you associate with a certain like past relationship or a certain, group of friends or something, and it's like not only do you just get kind of memories in the sense of a playback of events, but you get memories in the sense of like this activation of part of your associative memory, this network of thoughts and feelings that you may not have realized was still there, just waiting to be reactivated. Our stuff can kind of almost serve as this like catalog of old parts of ourselves that we haven't re-examined for a while and reevaluated for a while. And so it's like going through your stuff, it's not just about cleaning house and making physical space, it's about making emotional space and mental space taking stock of all of these things that you maybe didn't realize were still bouncing around in your head. A few episodes back, I had that topic, the experienced world or experienced reality, basically exploring this idea that the way that we subjectively experience the world, there are things that seem like they are part of our environment, but are actually kind of being generated by our minds. And this includes some of these kind of gut reactions to people and objects around us. So, you know, you may have a certain gut reaction to a person, which is not a quality of the person in kind of the physical space of objective reality, but it's just like a gut subconscious impression that your or judgment that your brain generates. But we sometimes don't realize that we're reacting to something in our own minds rather than reacting to the physical environment. When it comes to our stuff, you know, if you think about this, the Marie Kondo thing of like asking yourself, does this spark joy? That sparking is not only happening when you are asking yourself whether it's happening, it's happening all the time just as these things exist around us. And as we look at them, when we open our closet or go in our garage or whatever, that sparking is just continuous. And it's not just sparking emotions, it's sparking cravings and behaviors and memories and all of it. I think that you can take from that, going from the question of does it spark joy, you can get rid of a lot of stuff that way by finding things that spark shame or sadness or anger or just don't do anything for you, you know, the things that are just are not meaningful anymore. But then going forward from that, you know, thinking more proactively about, well, what do I want in my space? I think you can work backwards where you start with asking yourself, what do I want to spark? Like what emotions, what behaviors, what cravings, you know, and how can I spark those? What objects can exist in my space that spark those? So this is kind of how I have been trying to design my space as I sort of redo it. So a while back, I came up with this list of things that I can do that very reliably make me feel better and happier, both in the short term and the long term. So some of the items on this list are what I call nature bathing, which is just like, you know, being in nature in a very deliberate way, whether that's going to the beach or going for a hike or just kind of sitting outside and kind of taking in the woods. There is exercising, there is social connection, there is dancing, there's playing music, like on one of my instruments, for instance, there's meditation. And so, you know, these are all things that I feel like I have a pretty thorough and comprehensive body of anecdotal evidence that has really trained my brain. So like, I feel pretty confident that these will work. So what I want to do now is to kind of design my space and the objects in my space to spark those behaviors. So I was thinking about how, and if you've been around like toddlers, they kind of just will do whatever like activity you put in front of them in this space. Like if you are, you know, like a toddler's coming over to your house, if you put Play-Doh in the room, they're going to be interested in the Play-Doh. If you put a dollhouse in the room, they're going to probably play dolls. A lot of times kids that young will just kind of like bounce around between anything that attracts their attention in the room that it makes them want to go do that thing. If it's in front of me, I'm thinking about that. And I kind of think that's how most of us are, just not as extreme. If we want a certain thing to appear in our brain, then having that thing represented in our environment is a really good way to achieve that. And so, yeah, for me, knowing that exercise very reliably makes me happier, both in the immediate short term and in the long term, I want to put some representations of exercise in my space. So like my Ring Fit Adventure Ring Con, for instance, I want to be up on the wall where I can see it. So if I'm laying on the couch kind of bored, or if I feel cranky or brain fog, to be able to look up and say, oh yeah, there's that. That's something I could do. Likewise, knowing that nature bathing is something that makes me happy reliably, I've kind of built bigger windows into my house than I had before that look out onto my pond. And then I also am hoping to put either a map of the county with like hiking spots and things like that circled, or maybe some photos of some of my favorite places on my walls to remind myself that, hey, you know, the beach is only a mile and a half away. I could go sit on a bench for half an hour at the beach and come home and feel a lot better. Likewise, having photos of loved ones, not just in this sense of like, oh, that's something I care about, a marker of what I care about, but in the sense that I want these images to spark action of like, this is somebody I could text right now, this is somebody I could call. So I'm hoping to find photos that not only show my loved ones, but show opportunities to connect with them. So like, rather than just show somebody standing around and, you know, posing for a photo, maybe show, this is the group of friends that I play board games with. Let's have a picture of us playing a board game. And then I can see that on my wall as something that's something I could go do it. So that picture serves as a spark for something that I feel confident makes me happy. And maybe that, you know, make me more inclined to, you know, send out a group text to get those people together. Or if it's people who live farther away, maybe have some kind of representation of, oh, this is somebody I could play games online with, or this is someone I could have a video call with, or just, you know, call up on the phone or whatever. I've also kind of learned about myself that unfinished projects tend to spark shame and guilt. And so looking at that, you know, it's not as simple as just discarding, you know, because there's a lot of these things are things that I want to finish. So it's not like I can just bag it up like in the classic Marie Kondo sense of just getting rid of things that don't spark joy. It's more about, okay, how am I going to change the way that I work? And so I'm trying to be more deliberate about, let's only have so many unfinished projects going at a time, and let's try not to let them get so stale. Because if it's something I'm actively working on, that definitely doesn't spark shame. You know, in fact, I really enjoy working on different projects at home. But if it's something that has been sitting there half finished for 2 years, that's when it bugs me. And so, you know, it's not necessarily an object in my house per se, or it's not necessarily a something you can pick up and hold, but it's like, okay, you know, I have this tree that I cut down and I never really cleaned up the brush. And so there's a bunch of big branches kind of hang out and it looks like a mess and it makes me annoyed when I see it. And so I've kind of been implementing some like policies for myself, at least kind of guidelines to say like, okay, this is how many unfinished projects you want to limit yourself to at a time. And if you have more than that, then instead of starting anything new, try to go back and wrap those up. Or at least if there's a good reason to put it on hold, then kind of formally declare that to myself and say, okay, this project is on hold. I'm going to clean up the area, you know, as much as I can so that it's not just like visibly a mess, but and then every time I walk past it, I'm not feeling that like, oh, I gotta go get that done. You can really kind of think of your stuff as kind of generating this like energy field, kind of like the force, you know, there's kind of this like continuous stream of like slight mind control happening where your environment is and some, you know, to some extent controlling you and pushing your buttons and that's just always there. No matter where you are or what you're doing, you're always going to be mind controlled by your environment a little bit. And so it's not a question of not being mind controlled. It's more a question of taking control of the mind control and sort of designing your environment so that it's kind of mind control in a way that you're consenting to and you're deliberately sort of engineering, or at least that you can feel good about. Knowing that, you know, willpower and attention and things like that are limited for us, you know, mere mortals, being able to kind of control your own home at least, or at least your own room within your parents' home or whatever, is a way to kind of create a resting place, a place where you don't have a constant drain of willpower or a constant drain of dignity or, you know, a constant drain of joy from your environment. You know, by thinking about and noticing, okay, how does this make me feel? What does this make me want to do? You can at least have this like sanctuary so that you get home from driving past a bunch of billboards and big bright signs trying to grab your attention and seeing all these advertisements and stuff, it's like creating your own counterbalancing force in this kind of sanctuary of joy sparking and gratitude sparking and positive behavior sparking surroundings. You can find the Placebo Magic Podcast and my poetry on the web at garrisonbenson.com. Leave a voicemail for the show by calling 989-318-4118. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com and licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. You can support the show by giving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing an episode with a friend, or becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/placebomagic. Patreon supporters also gain access to our Patreon-exclusive bonus show. Remember, magic is a metaphor, and metaphor is magical.